Happy birthday, Mark Renner. Today's his birthday, everybody. So. Oh, that's right. Nancy Nowak. That's right. And Barb Morrow. That's right. I saw that. My goodness. So anyway, we're going to start in Matthew chapter 24 at the tail end, and then we're going to work our way into chapter 25. One of the things I want to focus on is in Matthew 24 and 25, and I know a lot of you have studied this, and there's a lot of people that have written on what chapter 24 and chapter 25 were talking about. Some writers and some scholars will take the position that all of this is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Some take the position that some of it's destruction of Jerusalem, some of it is truly Christ's return, and you know, and everything in between those two. I'd like to go back, though, just to give you a framework, is that at the very first part of Matthew 24, Jesus is questioned about the sign of the times and the end of the age. And if you notice, in verse 3 of chapter 24, I'm just going to set some groundwork here. Jesus is actually asked two questions. And I think he gives two answers. And we're going to pick up actually with the second answer at the end of chapter 24. But it says, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, this is chapter 24, verse 3, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age. So there's, you know, several questions they're asking. They're asking, when are these things going to happen? Because Jesus has just told them earlier that, you know, that the temple would be destroyed. And then they also ask him, what's the sign of that? And then also, what is the end of the age? And I think towards the end of chapter 24, Jesus actually answers the second question, and that's really where we're going to pick up. And one thing I do want to emphasize is whether Jesus' answer here is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem or his return, it really doesn't matter, because the gospel that Jesus taught was a gospel of preparation. We're supposed to be ready for his return. One of the things I'll note is in verse 34, all the things he talked about up to verse 36, he says in verse 34, this I say to you, this generation will by no means pass till all these things are fulfilled. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. A generation was 40 years. So he's saying the things prior to verse 36, all those things would happen to that generation. And then he picks up, and I think this is where he answers part of the second question. And again, I'll emphasize it, whether it means the destruction of Jerusalem still, or he's addressing the end of the age or his coming, it really doesn't matter, because for Christians, it's something that we need to do. And one of the things that he emphasizes here, beginning in verse 36, is he talks about to be ready. And that would have certainly be the case whether we were in Jerusalem at that time before it was destroyed, or whether we are here in 2017 waiting for the Lord to return. Can I get someone to read just a short reading here, verses 36 through 44? I just need a reader to that. Save my voice a little bit here tonight. Bruce? Okay.
36 through 44. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, also so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until that day Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect.
Okay. So again, this whole idea of being prepared, and again, it really doesn't matter if what Jesus was directly talking to was the destruction of Jerusalem and being prepared for the when those signs would happen, they were to leave the city, or whether he has shifted gears and is actually talking about the end of the age. You might notice the emphasis here is being prepared, and that there was going to be a lot of people that are going to be surprised. And Jesus himself references in the days of Noah, because in the days of Noah, all things were continuing as they always had been. People were drinking, people were marrying, people were being given in marriage, people were just living their normal day-to-day lives right up until the day that Noah entered the ark and God closed the door. And so that same idea would apply to us today. People are marrying, people are being given in marriage, people are living their day-to-day lives. Someday Jesus is going to return, whether it's in our lifetime or 1,000 years from now. I think the message still applies, is that we need to be ready. And he uses another example, and then I'll be glad to address any comments. I have one other verse to look at with this, is about the master of the house. And we certainly understand this. We all have homes, and it says if the master would have known when the thief would come in, he would have watched. He wouldn't have allowed his house to be robbed and broken into. And so this whole idea of being alert, being prepared, being ready, is what Jesus is emphasizing here. And he concludes that in verse 44. He says, therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man comes at an hour when you do not expect him. There's a parallel verse, and then I'd like to have any thoughts you guys might have. If I can get someone to read, let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. This is definitely here in 1 Thessalonians 5, talking about Christ's return. And if I can get a reader, I'd like someone to read verses 1 through 11, because Jesus here in 1 Thessalonians has just been talking about Christ's coming earlier in chapter 4, and then in verse chapter 5 he talks about the day of the Lord. Can I get someone to read verses 1 through, okay? Thank you, Kevin. Verses 1 through 11. Chapter 5, 1 through 11. Okay, one of the things that earlier in Thessalonians some of the brethren were concerned about was, what about those that have already died in Christ? And this is all addressed by Paul, and then he gives us this whole scenario here. And the same language is used that Jesus used about Jesus' return will be like a thief. And so we've got to be ready. It's like labor pains of a woman. You've got to be ready. So there's definitely a emphasis here of being ready, or being prepared, and that's the first point I want us to get tonight, is that we've got to be ready and prepared. Any thoughts or comments before we move over to the next section? Okay, you guys are quiet tonight. Okay, let's move on then to the next one. I want to move down just a little bit farther in Matthew 24 to the next section that Jesus talks about. And Jesus here in Matthew 24, we're going to pick up in verse 45 and read down through 51. And here Jesus is going to emphasize about being faithful and being wise. So these are a couple other things that Jesus says we need to be, is be faithful and to be wise. And this is a shorter reading. Can I get someone, if they would, to read 45 through 51? 45 through 51. Okay, Blake.
Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly I say to you that he will make you ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him in an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth."
Okay, so this is another follow-on at the end of chapter 24 from Jesus. Again, this whole emphasis about be faithful and be wise. Be like a faithful and a wise servant. And we all know this. We've studied this in other parts of the Bible. We're told that when we work as to working for whom? The Lord. We work as if, for, and not as an eye pleaser, not as just working when you see the boss coming. You work when the boss isn't even around. You work hard. And I can guarantee you that anybody that is a faithful Christian, if they work hard, they generally, you will see them get promoted in whatever their occupation is. They'll get moved up and be advanced in their services. And people notice that. I am an employer. I have 31 staff that work for me in ODOT. And I certainly notice the ones that work hard and certainly notice the ones that just do the minimum to get by. And so Jesus here is emphasizing, be faithful and wise, a faithful and wise servant. Clinton.
Work heartily as unto the Lord, not as a man eye pleaser. Just do the right thing when nobody's looking.
Absolutely. And because the Lord certainly sees it all. And one of the things that I wanted to point out is you notice the faithful servant in this very short reading here from Jesus. Jesus says the faithful servant, when he comes, the master finds him doing the work he should be doing. And the evil servant, of course, he rests his laurels on the fact that he says, well, the master's delaying. The master isn't coming right now. So he begins to do the things that he wants to do. He beats his fellow servants. He begins getting drunk and doing things that he should not be doing as a servant. And he is then caught at the end when the master appears unexpectedly. One of the things I want to emphasize to you is here that no one knows, none of these servants knew when the Lord was going to return. And so when the master did return, he found the one faithful servant and the one evil servant. But neither of them were aware of the return of the Lord. And that's something we can say too as Christians. None of us know when Jesus is going to return. It could be tomorrow. It could be 1,000 years from tomorrow. And our job is to continue on to be faithful, to be wise, to be servants, as if Jesus were watching us right now, which he is. And so that's, I think, something to emphasize. There's another passage I'd like to read that kind of relates to this too, if I can get another reader. Over in 2 Peter, if we can get someone to read 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through, let's see, let me get this right. 2 Peter 3, 1 through 9, if I can get a reader for that. Can I get a reader for that? Okay, Gary? Thank you, Gary. And that last verse, verse 9 there, should be really encouraging to us. I know I often get frustrated, and you may too, with just how things seem to be going in society. And I keep thinking, Lord, just end it, But then I think, I'm sure glad he's been patient with me all the times I really goofed up in my life. So I'm glad that God is long-suffering. And we're kind of given a little insight to the mind of God. It says, it's not... his desire. He is not willing or desirous that anyone would perish. So God's desire is not to come back with wrath and indignation and just wipe everybody off the face of the earth. He really wants mankind and men to repent. And it's interesting in this writing here that we're given from Peter, some of the same language is used about Noah in the days of Noah. And people were just thinking that all things were continuing as they had always gone, the cycles of earth, the seasons. And even though they were thinking that, that the fathers, since the fathers fell asleep, everything continued since the beginning of creation. And yet a day came, and this is the same reference that Jesus made, when Noah entered the ark and God closed the door, and that was it. And judgment was upon him. So this is just another, I think, emphasis for us from Peter here, that same idea of, be faithful, be working, be wise. And so that's the second section I wanted to cover with you in chapter 24. Any questions or comments before we move on to chapter 25? Because we'll get into some other meaty things here. Okay, chapter 25, we get into the parable of the wise and the foolish virgins. And the emphasis here for us is Jesus is emphasizing to be alert and to be prepared. And so this is another one of the B's for us, is to be alert and be prepared or be ready. Some of these are fairly similar language, but it's a thing that I think is being emphasized by the Lord, is to be ready and to be prepared. I'd like to read you a little bit of a thing. You know, we in our culture have a way that we do weddings, and it's kind of a cultural thing here in America, how weddings are handled, and all the you have the ring bearers, and you have the groomsmen and the bridesmaids, and they line up one on each side, and sometimes there's a lighting of a unity candle and those things. I like to read a little bit about from the Zondervan Dictionary about how Jewish weddings occurred, because it's a little bit different. And I want to get this in your mind before we read here about the parable of the ten virgins. And so this will kind of help place your mind in the right frame. The Zondervan says here, in Jewish marriage customs, the Bible centers around the two events of betrothal and wedding. The wedding itself did not include a religious ceremony. That was kind of a surprise to me. Although it is probable that the betrothal was ratified by an oath. And there's a couple examples from Ezekiel 16 and Malachi 2. It says, after the exile, written contracts were drawn up and sealed by both parties. On the day of the wedding, the bride would dress in white and was elaborately embroidered clothes and bedecked herself with jewels. And that is recorded examples of that in Isaiah 61. And the bride would also put on a veil, and that was from Genesis 24, and a garland. The bridegroom, on the other hand, would be attended by his friends and accompanied by many musicians and many singers, and they went out to the bride's house. And then after receiving her from her parents, with their blessing, he conducted then the whole party back to his own house. On the way, other friends of the bride and the groom would then join in the procession and the party, and there was much music and much dancing. A feast would then be held at the bridegroom's house, and then later in the evening, the bride's parents would escort her to the nuptial chamber, while he was led there by his friends or even the bride's parents. The next day, the festivities would be resumed and continue for 1 to 2 weeks. So it's a very long celebration in Jewish tradition. And the wedding festivities included much, much music and family joking. So that's kind of a background as to how a lot of Jewish weddings occurred. And so there's this whole procession where the bridegroom would come and appear and then take the bride, and they would then go, to his place. And so it's very interesting, a little bit different from our culture. So keeping that in mind, I'd like to turn over then and talk about, Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is going to be likened to these ten virgins. So let's read this about the ten virgins. And the emphasis here is, again, about being alert or being prepared. So can I get someone to read 1 through 13 in this one? 1 through 13. Okay, thank you, Wayne.
Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil in a flask along with their lamps. Now while the bridegroom was delayed, they all got drowsy and they began to fall asleep. But at midnight there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom, come out and meet him." And all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut.
And on, yeah, on to verse 13.
Later, the other virgins also came, saying, "Lord, Lord, open up for us." But he answered, "Truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour."
Okay, so again, there's an idea here. Jesus is trying to tell us something. He says, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. And if I'm reading this correctly, and you guys have just heard in Wayne's reading, there is some preparedness that we've got to have in our lives. And Jesus gives us a very simple illustration of something that was common to them of a wedding. And he says, you know, there's 10 virgins total, and half of them were ready, and half of them were not ready. Just a couple things for you, and we know that the parable here, it was interesting as I was reading through this, is that one of the things is there is a difference, and Wayne kind of emphasized this in verse 5, it says, they all slumbered and then slept. There's a difference between those words, and I didn't realize that. One of the commentaries I looked at said that when you are slumbering, the word for slumber really means to begin to nod off. So as the bridegroom was delayed in his coming, some of them started to nod off. And we've all been there. I know I've been driving when I started nodding off. So I got to stop at a rest area. But there's a difference between starting to nod off and then going into a complete slumber. And the word for slept is a deep sleep. So what happened to all these the virgins is that the bridegroom delayed and they started nodding off and then they finally went into a very deep sleep. Now, at midnight, and the emphasis is, you know, at a time that is least expected, the middle of the night, in the parable here in verse 6, says a cry is heard, that's an urgent clamor, says, "Behold, the bridegroom is here." And I think there's an emphasis for us, you know, that Jesus is going to come at a time when people are not expecting. They're just not going to be ready. Some will be ready and some will not be ready. And again, the emphasis here is we as Christians, we've got to be alert. We've got to be prepared. And I'll emphasize this again. Jesus may come tomorrow. He may come 1,000 years from now. We don't know. But the emphasis to us is to be prepared. One other thing I want to point out to you in this is in verse number 7. There's an interesting Greek word here. It says, when the cry went out, all of the virgins get up, all 10 of them, and it says they arose and they trimmed their lamps. Interesting word there. That word trimmed is from the Greek word kosmio, and it really means to put in order. And so the commentary said that when the virgins had all fallen asleep, their lamps burned out, and to put your lamp back in order, you would have to pull some of the wick out, pull some of the black charcoal off the end of it so you could light it. And in the case of the virgins that had oil, they lit it and it stayed lit. The other ones, when they cleared off the wick and then went to light it, it just burned just for a second or two because there was no more oil in the lamp to draw through the wick. And so what we see is all of them were trying to put their lamps in order so they could go out and to meet the bridegroom. And I thought that was rather interesting. Is it, you know, emphasis to us is put your life in order. But they had to take their lamps and put them in order, get them ready. And of course, then there's a dire need. The foolish virgins say, "Hey, we don't have any oil. Our lamps won't light." And then they want the wise virgins to give them oil, and they say, "No, you need to go to the cellars." And the other interesting point, I think, for us is in verse 10, is there comes a point when the wedding party has started, says the door was shut. Kind of a finality right there. And reminds me a little bit about when Noah, in the days of Noah, when Noah went in, animals were in, Noah and his family went in, and it says, and God shut the door. And I think that's going to be the same case when Jesus returns. There's going to be a finality in which there's not going to be any more time to prepare. People that have not become a Christian, or people that have delayed becoming a Christian, or people that have deferred wanting to be a Christian, it's going to be too late. It's not going to be time to go back and buy oil. It's going to be over. Ian. Oh, absolutely. That's a great thought. I hadn't even thought about that. That's a really, really nice thought. Any other thoughts on that? Because I just have a couple more comments, and then we'll move on to one more section. Again, this is told by Jesus, and his emphasis at the end in verse 13 is to watch, therefore, because you know not the day or the hour in which the Son of Man is going to return. There's a couple other things I wanted to point out here is that, you know, as we said, the door was shut in verse 10, and then we have the foolish virgins then making their plea in verse 11 saying, "Lord, Lord, open up to us." I'm sure in the day of Noah, there were people banging on the side of the ark saying, "Let us in." Of course, they had mocked Noah for a period of 100 to 120 years while the ark was being prepared. In fact, Peter tells us that Noah was a preacher of righteousness while he was building the ark. So Noah had been preaching to the people in that day and that age, and they evidently mocked him or did not heed him. And of course, when the rains came, which to some degree we don't even know if they had ever seen rain before because the earth was watered by a mist, I'm sure there was some knocking on the door there too. And it says that God shut the door. But there is a knocking on the door by the those that are unprepared, and the answer is, to me, very similar to what we read in Matthew 7. But he answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you," verse 12, "I do not know you." There is a denial by the Lord that he even knows who these people are. They weren't ready. They weren't prepared. They weren't alert. They weren't there to serve him. And so, very interesting. It's very similar to the language, and we'll just read over here briefly in Matthew chapter 7, if I can get another reader here, a short reading, verses 21 through 23 of Matthew 7, if I can get someone to read that. This is, again, where Jesus is teaching about authority and those that know him and those that don't know him. Matthew 7, 21 through 23. Who's got that? Got your reader. Okay, Kevin.
"Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'"
Okay, a couple thoughts on this. First question, are these religious people? What we call religious people. Do they call him Lord? Yeah, they call him Lord. These are apparently religious people. And they are saying, you know, "We did all these things. Look at what we've done, Lord. We've done this for you, and we've done that for you, and we've done this for you." Jesus responds and says, I don't know who you are. And the word actually he uses here when he says, "Depart from me, you practice lawlessness," that's things, that is, lawlessness is things done without authority. Now, can we apply that today? You bet. There's all kinds of religious groups that we live in today that do all kinds of things in the name of the Lord. And they're going to have to account for that. They're going to have to stand before the Lord, and Jesus is going to tell them, you know, either they did it by his authority or he doesn't know them. And so it's a very similar language here. And Jesus, and I want to also point out, Jesus here in Matthew 7 never says that the works weren't good. He never says, you didn't do those things. What he does say is, you did them without my permission. You did them without my authority. You're doing all these things. And in many cases, we see this in the religious world today. Many things are often done by people to emphasize themselves and to promote themselves. And it's unfortunate because we live in a world of many, many, many denominations and many religions. And Jesus says, anything that you do religiously has to be done by his authority or his permission. And if you don't, you're practicing lawlessness. So that is a kind of a summary on the 10 virgins. I'd like to look at one more. I think we've got just enough time to finish up before the end of class. And that's the next section here in Matthew 25. And we're going to read about the parable of the talents. And if there's a B here for you, I would encourage you to take it as this, is to be busy. God has given us all abilities to do things. And I think the emphasis here on this particular parable is to be busy. Be about doing the things that you can with what God has given you. One thing I want to give you just as a preface before we get into that real deep is to describe to you really what a talent is. Sometimes you'll hear preachers use this to talk about your personal talents, your abilities you have, and that certainly applies. But in this case, in the parable, it's actually talking about weights. And it's talking about, you'll hear in the Old Testament, talk about kings that gave so many talents of gold or so many talents of silver as a tribute. Well, I just want to give you a comparative value here. And this is from the Jewish interpretation of the common shekel and how it is weighed out. And I won't go into the entire table, but a talent is said to be 60 minas, M-I-N-E-H-S, or equivalent to 75 pounds of coin, or gold, or silver, okay? A mina, or a mina, is said to be 50 shekels, which is a coin. So if you look at that, and that is about, of those is 20, is about 20 ounces. What it comes down to is when you read now the man who is given 5 talents and the man who's given 2 talents and the man who's given 1 talent, if you do the math, the man who has 5 talents basically has, 60 times 50 is 3,000. And so if the man has 5, that's 3,000 coins. If he has 5 talents, he's got 15,000 coins. That was the man with 5 talents. The man with, 2 talents? Mm-hmm. 2 talents, he has 6,000 coins. And that's the man with 2 talents. And then the man with 1 talent has 3,000 coins. And so think of that in terms of its weight and its coin value as we read through this. And it'll give you a little bit more of an understanding what Jesus is talking about why he expected them to produce some things for him. Parable of the talents. Let's read verses 14 through 30. And I'll read this one. And we'll just read through this so we can get done before the end of class. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven," again, another example Jesus giving to us, "is like a man who traveled in a far country, and he called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability." And I want to emphasize that. It was according to their ability, what they had the ability to control. "And he went on a long journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them, and he made another 5 talents." So he invested these. He got interest money. "And likewise, he who had received 2 talents gained 2 more also. But he who had received the 1 went and dug a hole in the ground and hid his Lord's money." So he did nothing with it. And after a long time, we don't know how long this time is, I want to emphasize to you here that a long time had passed. That waiting period, the servants were to be working. They were to be investing these talents. But, you know, some of them did, some of them didn't. But after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And so he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides these. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things, and I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. So there's the reward. 22. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents, and look, I've gained 2 more talents besides these. And the Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. One thing I want to point out, what was the reward for the 5-talent guy and the 2-talent guy? It was the same, exactly. God only gave them what they had the ability to control. The reward was the same for both of them. Verse 24, then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed, and I was afraid. And I went and I hid your talent into the ground, and look, you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and you lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and scatter where I have not scattered seed. Therefore, you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. At my coming, I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast that unprofitable servant into outer darkness, for there will be a weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so one of the things I want to emphasize here is that a couple things is while the Lord delayed coming, they were to be working. They were to be busy. And so while their delay occurred, they were to be doing their job. And another thing I want to point out in verse 19 is that God will come back. The master came back and he wants to settle accounts. He's going to settle accounts. And the reward for the man that had a lot of talents, the man had 15,000 pieces of coin, was the same as the man who had the 6,000 pieces, because they both put them to use, and they invested these, and they made the Lord profit on his money, but the one who did nothing was accursed. And I think the message to us and the application for us is that we've got to be busy. All of us, and I'm going to take this away now from the coin example and put it to a personal thing. All of us are blessed with different abilities. Some of us have the ability to publicly speak. Some can lead songs. Some can preach. Some can teach classes. Some are very good writers. Some are good about doing things with helping other people and setting up meetings and setting up things for people that are in dire need and need food delivered. There's just so many things that we can do. We have some that stand at the door and greet people. All of us have these talents, and I'll use these in a different vernacular, is that we have these different abilities. God expects us to be busy. And while he is delaying coming, he expects us to be doing something with those talents. If we just take what God has given us and just bury it in the ground and not do anything for his kingdom, from what I can read, we're in trouble when he does return. And so that is kind of one of the final things I want to emphasize here is that we need to be very busy with the talents, the abilities. And it's other things too. It's your time. It's your money. It's just maybe it's physical labor that you can help somebody with. I know there's a whole bunch of people out here helping with the trees a couple weeks ago. It doesn't matter. The point is, God doesn't look differently on the person who has a whole lot of ability versus the person who has very little ability. What God does expect is to take the ability you have and use it in his kingdom. And that's what he expects. It doesn't mean the guy with 5 is more valuable than the man with 2. What it means is God wants you to use what he's given you. The Greek word for talent, by the way, is from the word talentos, and it literally means weight. It means weight. So that's kind of the thoughts I had for tonight. I told Jack I'd try to cover this in a way that made sense to everybody, but the Lord was very definite in telling us to be ready, be prepared, be faithful, be wise, be alert, again, be prepared, and be busy. There are things that we can do in the kingdom, and each one of us has different things that we can do to grace him in his kingdom and to enlarge the borders of his kingdom. And we may all have different abilities, and it doesn't matter. All that matters is that we're busy, and that's the important part. Any closing thoughts or anything anybody might have before we wrap up tonight? Ann. It matters. Well, you remember the Lord called him lazy, the servant that did nothing. He called him lazy. So it's something to think about. I know you guys have heard this expression. There's an old expression that says, if you want something done, give it to a busy man or a busy woman. You know, someone that's busy, give it to them. They'll get it done. And so God certainly wants us to help him enlarge the border of his kingdom. We have a whole world of people that are dying in sin. And he wants us to be busy. Back in the back.
Yeah, I think each one of those situations really deal with a heart condition. And it's all about where you are in your heart as far as wanting to serve. And, you know, there's just like the lamp, you can put a lamp on a table and it gives light to the whole room. We're to be that light. And you don't put it under a table. You don't hide it. You take it, you use it. The same thing with the talents. You have the talents and the abilities, but if you bury them, it shows your heart condition. You're not willing to step forward and do something about the grace of God that he's given you, the free gift that he's given you, and to use it in his service. And whatever that ability is, and I think you covered it really well, we all have abilities, but what are we doing with them? Are we
right.
sitting on them? Are we simply letting them? We know they're there. We have this semblance of being a Christian, but are we living it? Is it internalized? Are we taking action? I think that's what all of these parables do, is to show the need and the urgency for action now, not later, because it might be too late if you wait.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. That was a very, very good comment. And, you know, we all get tired. I get tired. And sometimes we say, I don't want to, but, you know, God needs us. And I'm sure Jesus was tired when he carried that cross up to Calvary, too. So I've had times in my life when I thought, I'm tired, but okay, Jack needs me to do this, the elders want me to do that, and you know, you do it. So be busy. I appreciate everybody's comments, and wish you well, and let's just, when you read these sections, just realize God wants us to be busy in his kingdom and be ready and prepared. So Bobby, I'll have you let him go ahead and come on in. Thank you, everybody.
Good job.
Thank you, sir.